Good to see everybody. Good morning. Good to be here, and it's always good to be here together with the family of God. Thank you so much for your attendance and for your activity this morning. This morning we're going to go old school, no PowerPoint. I'll try to make sure I don't get going too fast on the scriptures here. But I want to begin by saying thank you to the men. I know Buddy and Gary and Jackie have been working hard on getting the new baptistry ready to go in, and we've worked really hard this week on that, and we all need to tell them a big thank you. They put a lot of time into that, and they continue to do so. Thank you to those who've led us this morning. Thank you for everything you do here in this congregation with the many things going on. Also want to mention next Sunday, our family will be out of town, and Patrick's going to fill in Sunday morning, and others will be helping out. I want to begin by saying thank you to them as well. This morning, I want to continue looking at the book, The Gospel of Jesus Christ According to John the Apostle. And so last time we were together, we looked at John chapter 4. This morning, I want to look at John chapter 5. Now, Patrick shared with us that reading there from those first six verses, but what we find here is Jesus coming to the pool of Bethesda. Now, the text tells us that he came by the pool, and there, laying around on these porches, or these flat areas, are all these individuals who are sick. And they're coming there because they believe that at a certain time, that pool will become miraculous. And if you can get down into the pool when that's going on, you can be healed. And so it's drawn lots of people in. Now, if you're sick, and for some of us who've been really sick, how hard do we look for answers, for cures? You know, we'll go all over the world looking for a cure to disease, right? We spend billions of dollars in our country and throughout the world, trillions of dollars, on medicine and on medical cures. If someone's sick, we're going to search out for healing. This week, Micah tried to have a fight with my trailer. Oh, what happened? He lost, and then we had to run to the emergency room to try to get that care he needed. You know, when we're sick, we search out that healing. Well, here are all these individuals, and they're all laying around there and sitting, and Jesus is coming in among them, him and his apostles. And he comes to this one individual. And I want you to notice what he says, or what the text says in verses 5 and 6. Now, a certain man was there who had an infirmity 38 years. Now, we don't know how old he is, but we know for a great portion of his life, he's been sick. He's been needing healing. He's been needing help physically. And so Jesus saw him lying there, and it's interesting, the text tells us in verse 6, he knew the condition of that man. He knew and knew that he already had been in that condition for a long time. You know, this man knew he was sick. He knew he needed help. You know, when we know we're sick, we can search out, we can find places to go. But one of the most difficult situations we can be in at times is not knowing what's wrong. How many of us have had something going on and we went to the doctor, we went to the specialist, and man, they just can't figure it out. How stressful is that? I mean, that just eats away at us. Sometimes some of us may say, you know, I'd like to know, even if it's terrible, just to know, just to have that information. I can do something about what I know about, but for these mysteries, I don't know. And so we will, I don't think doctors do this much anymore, but there was a time in our history when doctors would do exploratory surgery. Now, to me, that just sounds awful. You're going to open me up and just look around, you know, dig around. Let's see what we can find. But when you don't know, you're exploring. You're searching out. You know, you think about in our lives, that's one thing physical, but what about the other things in life? What about those spiritual things? What about those things in our day-to-day lives? Have we ever been sick and not really known it? I want to go to 2 Samuel chapter 12. 2 Samuel chapter 12, and most of us know this account really well. It's the account of David and Bathsheba and Uriah. And we remember what happens in chapter 11. David's at a place he shouldn't be, looking at someone he shouldn't be looking at. And then those events occur, eventually ends up in the death of Uriah. It's interesting that after all that happens, and the text tells us at the end of chapter 11, that David brought, after Bathsheba had mourned for her husband, he brought her in and took her as one of his wives. David's just going to go on and live life. Now, I'm sure he felt some guilt about all that happened, but somehow he was able to push a lot of that away. Well, the text also tells us that God became very angry at David because of what he'd done. And so he sends Nathan the prophet to him, chapter 12. And Nathan shares with him this illustration. Now, David doesn't know it's an illustration. Or maybe it was a true story. I don't know. The text doesn't tell us. But it's a story of a man who has this sheep that he loves, this sheep that has become, this lamb has become a part of the family. And he's got this neighbor who's rich and wealthy and has all this stuff, and he just comes and takes the lamb away so he can share it with his guests. And David hears that illustration, and he becomes furious. And he's so angry at that man. And I've mentioned this before, but in verses 5 and 7, the text tells us, so David's anger was greatly aroused against this man. And he said to Nathan, as the Lord lives, the man who has done this shall surely die. And he shall restore fourfold for the lamb, because he did this thing, and because he had no pity. Nathan's laid a trap for David, hasn't he? David doesn't understand. He's talking about himself. He's going to know it in just a second, though. Verse 7 tells us Nathan says to him, "You are the man." Now, up until the time Nathan says that to David, David does not really understand how sick he is, how desperate his situation is, how in need of healing he is. Nathan says, "You are the man." You know, some of us, subtleness doesn't work. Now, some of us, we can catch on to subtleness. We can, you're talking about me. Oh, you know, others of us be like, yeah, so. And we take a little bit more forward approach, right? David's being straight out. I mean, Nathan's being straight out with David. You are the man. This is you. You're so angry at yourself. Because that's what you've done. Later in that same chapter, in verse 13, David acknowledges his sin. He says, "I have sinned against the Lord." And Nathan said to David, "The Lord has also put away your sin. You shall not die." But before God would do that, what did David have to do? He had to first acknowledge his sin. See, he had been living in denial of it. Do we ever live in denial? We all got faults. We all got personality faults. We all have little behavioral faults. We all have faults in the way we talk. Do we deny those sometimes, though? We live in denial of those things. We're never going to improve as Christian people until we own up to those things. In Ephesians chapter 5, I want you to notice what Paul writes to the Ephesian church. He's having to remind them of something. Ephesians 5, beginning at verse 8, Paul writes, "For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret. But all things that are exposed are manifest by the light, for whatever makes manifest is light." Now, I know he's talking about false doctrine here, but I want to apply it to ourselves. I think the application is still the same. Now, I'm not asking you to go out and expose yourself. Please don't do that. You're getting in big trouble. But I do want us to really look at who we are. Underneath the bravado or the facade sometimes we paint on our face, that we show to other people, there's those things lying behind that. You know, we can be all kinds of things to other people, and we can show all kinds of faces to other people, all kinds of appearances. But it really gets down to who are we and knowing who we are. James says in James 5:16, he says, "Confess your faults or trespasses to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed." You know that, I'm not asking us to begin to go through and detail all our faults and things, all our trespasses, but to each other. But can we at least own it to ourselves? Can we at least make that deal with ourselves to own up to where we fall short, to acknowledge those things? And in doing that, I want to note something else. It then becomes more than just knowing you're sick. I want to go back to John 5, verse 6. John 5 and verse 6, Jesus has come to the pool here. He's seen this man. He knows this man's life. He knows he's been sick for a long time. But note the question he asked. This is fascinating to me. Here's this man. He's been sick for 38 years. And he's been coming to this pool for how long? Who knows? And yet Jesus asked him this question at the end of verse 6. Do you want to be made well? Now, for some of us, we're fully willing to accept we're faulty. I've heard a lot of people say that. Well, that's just who I am. That's just who I am. I mean, that's the, you know, the honest truth. Do you want to be made well? And that's a fascinating question. Here's this guy. He's laying here. He's sick. And Jesus says, do you want to be made well? Wouldn't you think just by being there, he wants to be made well? Why does Jesus ask that question? Because here's the reality. Some of us like to wallow in our own faults. That becomes a badge of honor. I'm just a straight talker. I tell it how it is. I'm still for Patrick's class. Some of us love that. Others of us don't. How do we live our lives? Are we trying to make improvements in our life? Do we want to make our lives better? In Mark chapter 10, there's a young man who comes to Jesus. And he says in verse 17 of Mark 10, he says, "Good teacher, what shall I do that I may inherit eternal life?" Great question. That's a question all of us should be asking. That's what a lot of people in the world are asking. Jesus goes on to tell him, you know the commandments. Do not commit adultery, do not murder, do not steal, do not bear false witness, do not defraud, honor your father and mother. Now Jesus is not asking a question here. He's not even answering his question yet. You notice what he said. You know those things. You've got those things taken care of. But in verse 20, he says, "Teacher, all these things I've kept from my youth." And he's excited because he knows I've got my life right, right? Verse 21, Jesus, looking at him, loved him. And said to him, "One thing you lack." Now, it'd be great for Jesus to examine my life and say, "There's one thing you need to correct." Wouldn't it be great? Well, maybe. Depends on what the answer to that is, right? What is that one thing? It could be a really big thing. And for this young man, it was. He says, "One thing you lack, go your way, sell whatever you have, give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Come, take up the cross and follow me." But he was very sad at this word. You think he came kind of knowing that about himself? He was sad. Why was he so sad? Because he knew that was one leap too far. That was a step in his life he was unwilling to take. This man knew. Jesus pointed it out for him. Even if he didn't know beforehand, he knows now. But he went away sad because he knew, "I just can't go that far. I can't do that." He was unwilling. He did not want to be made well. Now, he'd have all the appearances of one who looked well. If others were to look at him and look at his life, he looked like he was living good. But one thing you lack. Do you want to be made well? At this point in this young man's life, he did not want to be made well. He was unwilling to do so. We need to acknowledge where we're short. We need to acknowledge our shortcomings to at least ourselves. And then we have to ask ourselves, am I ready to go the next step? Am I ready to make the changes necessary? I'm going to go back to John 5. Beginning there at verse 7, Jesus says, "Do you want to be made well?" Verse 6, the sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up. But while I am coming, another steps before me." Jesus said to him, "Rise." And we'll finish that in just a minute. But he says, "Rise." Do you want to be made well? A lot of us would say, I've got these things in my life. I want to make change. I want to be better. I want to make my life better. Are you ready to rise up? Are you ready to get up to do the things necessary? You know, it's so easy to become cynical in life. Go on down to verse 9. You know, Jesus has healed this young man, or older man, and And he says, rise, take up your bed and walk. And that's what the man does, verse number 9. Notice verse 10. Well, end of verse 9, it was the Sabbath. It was the day, and that day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said to him who was cured, it is the Sabbath. It is not lawful for you to carry your bed. I want you to get this in your mind here. Here's this man who's been like this for 38 years. He hasn't been able to pick up his bed and carry it. And yet with a simple phrase, rise, simple word, rise, that man's been cured. What an amazing thing. And yet here are these men, these Jews who are so cynical. All they think about, this is Sabbath day, you can't be taking your bed. Now they're misusing the truth here. They put hedges where God's not put them. And all they can think about is he's carrying his bed. They haven't thought anything about, wow, look what just happened. This is astonishing. This is awesome. This isn't some parlor trick. This guy's been here for 38 years. We can get so cynical. Ephesians 5 and verse 14, Paul writes to the Ephesians. Ephesians 5:14. Therefore he says, awake, you who sleep. Arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. Some of us are sleepwalking spiritually. We're just walking through the motions. We're doing what we do every day. We're doing what we do every Sunday. We're doing what we do every Wednesday. We're not trying to make ourselves better. We're not trying to make ourselves look more and more like Jesus. In Romans 12 and verse 2, Paul writes to the Romans, and do not be conformed to this world. Now, why would you have to tell Christians, don't be conformed to this world? Because Christians conform themselves to the world. Because we want to be like everybody else. He says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed. How? By the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. He doesn't just say renew your mind. He says and prove. Well, how do you prove? You're transforming the way you behave, the way you talk, the way you live. I'm beginning to make changes necessary. We go back to John 5, verse 8. Jesus says, rise, take up your bed and walk. This is when it gets hard, isn't it? When I've got to take up my bed and actually start to walk. You know, we make New Year's resolutions all the time. We make all kinds of resolutions. A lot of us will look at ourselves and we'll be like, you know, I really need to exercise. I really need to eat better. And we get those treadmills and workout machines and we spend all this money and what happens? End up becoming a clothes hanger. We throw our clothes on it. We shove it in a closet and we go in there and there's dust. We wouldn't want that anybody to see that, right? How much dust is collected on it. So we make all these resolutions and there's no follow through. You know, we think about our lives and we say, you know, I don't need to gossip like I do. You know, I don't need to do that. Are we still gossiping like we used to gossip? We say, I need to study my Bible. I need to do that. We still saying that? I need to pray more. You know, I need to quit using those words. You know, every now those words slip out of our mouths, and that language comes out that we wouldn't want to ever hear an elder hear, or one of our older ladies to hear. We still doing that? What steps are we taking to make those improvements? How are we making changes in our lives? Have we made a plan to change? Now, hey, it's hard. How many of us have made plans? We've started really well. We've done it well for a while, and something happens, life happens, and we gets forgotten. Or we've made a plan to study the Bible every night, and for a while we're great at it, and then life happens, and things go on, and before we know it, we're not doing it anymore. That happens to all of us. Here's the difference that makes a really spiritual person is someone who will say, you know what, I need to get back on the train here. I need to make those steps again, and I need to get back into what I was doing. You know, it does us no good to complain. We're the best at complaining in our country, and I'm generalizing. You may be great at it, and I hope you are. I'm not always great at it. Sometimes I complain. Complaining gets us nowhere. Complaining about our faults, complaining about the way things could be better, get us nowhere. What are we doing to make those changes? You know, in 2 Corinthians 5:17, Paul writes, 2 Corinthians 5:17, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. Old things have passed away. Behold, all things have become new. Old things have passed away. That passing away takes a while sometimes, doesn't it? Sometimes those old things are still there. And we haven't really pushed those away. Jesus tells this man, he finds him later in the temple, and he said to him, see, John 5:14, see, you have been made well. Your sins have been forgiven. But notice what he says, sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you. Jesus forgave him, but that he wasn't done. Jesus healed him, but he wasn't done. He said, sin no more. There's still work that needs to go on in this man's life. There's still work that needs to go on in our lives. In Romans chapter 6, verse 1, Paul is writing to a group of Christians. These are amazing statements. I am amazed by them, but I also think today and think about myself and the church today, and I think, wow, we could say some of these same things. He says, what shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Certainly not. How shall we who died to sin live any longer in it? And these are Christians. Shouldn't they know that? You know, it's one thing to talk about personal habits, things that don't really harm our spirituality and wanting to make those changes. I want to lose weight. Great. You know, that's a good thing. But if I don't accomplish that, it's not going to deter my eternal soul. But what about those spiritual shortcomings? What are we doing to take those things out of our lives? What are the steps we're engaging in to help us to overcome those things? Are we doing what we should to be made well? And the bigger question is, do we even want to be made well? What kind of attitude do we have in regard to spirituality? Are we just comfortable with the way things are? Do we want to make real change? We can. We can. Jesus can help us to do that. Now, here's the misnomer. If I've got something going on in my life, I can't just go and pray about it and ask Jesus to help me and then it be cured. Jesus, please help me to quit smoking. All right? I'm not just going to quit smoking the next day because I prayed about it. Jesus, help me to quit cursing. I'm not going to just stop cursing because I prayed about it. I've got to make changes in my life. Now, Jesus will help me with that. But I've got to make those steps. Do you want to be made well? For those who aren't Christians, you know, Romans chapter 6, Paul goes on to explain how Jesus can make us well, how he can forgive our sins and set us on a new path. By obeying the gospel, by confessing Jesus as Lord, repenting of my sins and being immersed into him, being baptized into him, my sins can be washed away and I can be set on a new track in life and I can begin to live for Jesus. Maybe you're a child of God who's wandered away from the truth, and you're not so healthy right now. Maybe spiritually speaking, you're just not doing so great. You know, we've all been there. We've all had those struggles. Do you want to be made well? That's the real important question. And are you ready to make the steps in your life to make those changes? If you have a need, any need at all, please come as together we stand and sing.